This week, the police comedy Brooklyn Nine-Nine will end its 8-season run. Starring Andy Samberg and Andre Brower, among many other gifted comic actors, the show has enjoyed a devoted following and strong reviews.
It's also survived shaky ratings and a change in networks, and its last season is airing against the backdrop of more intense conversations around real-life police violence that can't be laughed off or swept aside. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. Today we are talking about Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision, kind of like choosing to listen to your favorite song on repeat. And with their top-rated app, you can deposit checks and transfer money anytime, anywhere, making Capital One an even easier decision. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome back. You just met Aisha Harris. Also with us is NPR TV critic Eric Deggans. Welcome back, Eric.
What up? What up? What up? How's it going?
It's going well. It's great to have you. So we have talked on this show about Brooklyn Nine-Nine. We even did an episode on it back in 2015, and we've been delighted to see it renewed and revived as it's wended its way through 8 seasons. Last month, it kicked off a final 10-episode season, which ends with the last 2 episodes airing Thursday night. Now, this season follows a long gap. The last episode of season 7 aired in April of 2020, 1 month before the murder of George Floyd. And the reckoning that followed included a national conversation about depictions of police in TV and movies. And this show certainly could not have moved forward or finished its run without acknowledging the world around it. Brooklyn Nine-Nine's final season has its characters reckoning with that new landscape in different ways. Rosa Diaz has left the force to investigate bad cops, while other characters are reassessing in smaller and subtler ways. Charles Boyle is leaning into virtue signaling. Amy Santiago and Captain Holt are pushing for department-wide reforms. Jake Peralta is taking responsibility for his own missteps as a cop, not to mention trying to maintain work-life balance now that he and Amy have a new baby. Now, we thought that now would be a good time to check in with Brooklyn Nine-Nine as it's winding down. So, Aisha, I'm going to start with you. How did you feel about Brooklyn Nine-Nine in the past, and how do you feel about it now that you're watching these new episodes?
So, I've been watching it since the very beginning. First of all, I've always been a huge Andy Samberg fan, and it started off kind of being about him. He was kind of the central character, even though it's always been an ensemble show. He was sort of the entryway point to the rest of the Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And I enjoy that. And I also think this is the type of show that, because it started out the gate with a very diverse cast, 2 Black cops, you have 2 Latina cops, it kind of was able to hide behind that in a way, or sort of cover over the fact that this is still a show about police officers. And also, frankly, 8 years ago, I was not in the same place, and a lot of us were not in the same place, of thinking critically about how we portray police and especially the NYPD. And so I loved it. But I will say that right around 2014, 2015, I started feeling a little weird about it. I even wrote a piece in Slate around the either second or third season where I was like, this feels a little weird, because this was coming at a time when you had Eric Garner, you had, you know, Mike Brown. And it's like, I love this show, but then also I'm not a huge fan of the idea of the police in general. And so I've been wrestling with it since then. But I think now especially, it's interesting to see the way in which they have this season really tried to have their cake and eat it too. And I don't think it's quite working in the way that they hope to. And it fundamentally comes down to this. This season, they are very much still living in this fantasy world that there can exist this one good bunch of police at a precinct, and they can ultimately change and reform this world from the inside. And while Rosa has left the force for reasons, saying that, like, I don't feel good about my job anymore, which I think is really interesting, we don't get as much of her perspective outside of that. We're seeing a lot of Captain Holt. We're seeing a lot of Jake saying, like, how do we make this place better? And we're seeing a lot of that, which I don't think it's really hard to square that away with the fact that we live in times where reform hasn't really been shown to work. And so, Yeah, I'm feeling mixed about the season, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, but there's some high notes and then there's some low notes for me in terms of the way they're trying to tackle this.
So I'm a much more casual fan of the show. I'm that kind of person where I don't seek out Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but when I stumble on it, I always enjoy it. I watched all the current season's episodes that critics had access to. So it was interesting for me to sort of catch up with the show at a time when it was trying to be funny and still have this sort of quick patter and these almost lighthearted jokes about these goofy characters, but also talk about something serious like police brutality or systemic racism in policing. And one of the things that surprised me was how much they were actually able to pull a lot of that off. And if you look at the end of, for example, the episode called The Setup, where basically Jake Peralta is convinced that this guy is behind a mystery attempt to bomb a bus, and he winds up arresting the wrong guy, and he winds up surveilling the wrong guy. And at the end of the episode, he winds up having to face this idea that as much as he wants to do the right thing, he is trapped in a system that is constantly making it easy for him to do the wrong thing and absolving him of consequences when he does the wrong thing. So I see them trying to deal with it, and I think they dealt with it more deftly than I expected. The thing that struck me was that the other episode, they have an episode where they're looking into a Black woman believes she's been brutalized by police officers. And so Jake goes to help his old partner look into this. And the two Black male police officers are not really involved in that at all. And they don't even really sort of have an opinion about it, which I think is weird. If you're going to do a show where you're tackling Black people getting brutalized by police, you would think the Black police officers would be on the front line of talking about that. And having Terry Crews' character in particular constantly just be a source of sort of goofy jokes and not be engaged in this conversation, it just felt a little weird to me. There's an episode with Craig Robinson called PB&J, where Craig Robinson plays this criminal who somehow has this weird friendship with Jake. And so there's this whole episode where a Black man is trying to escape from a white police officer, yet they have this weird friendship. And the whole time I'm just thinking, the whole racial element of this is really messing with me. So
I'm so glad you brought that up, because this show has had recurring characters, and especially recurring criminals. And Craig Robinson as Doug Judy, to me, has been one of the greatest sources of joy I've ever had. Like, I love that relationship. At the same time, I realize how kind of insidious this, like, it's like if Elmer Fudd and Daffy Duck had, like, become friends, and instead of it being like a menacing sort of thing or like a angry sort of combative relationship, it's like, oh yeah, like you rascally rabbit or rascally duck or whatever you want to call him. And it's such a weird thing, because I love it, but then at the same time I'm just like, this is not realistic at all. And it gives into this like sense that there are still good cops, and I'm not going to say that there aren't, but I think that we have tried to overcompensate for that and not wanted to address that a lot of them are not doing the right thing, and they get to cover these things up. And I think that relationship is such a weird thing.
I know a lot of good cops. I used to be involved in a youth program with a lot of them here in St. Petersburg, Florida. So that doesn't seem that weird to me, because I know a lot of good cops, a lot of good Black cops who are trapped in a system that is almost by its nature abusive to poor people and people of color. But the thing that's weird to me is that's the one instance where I can think of where the show makes light of a dynamic in policing and race that is terrible.
Right.
Like, even though they portray the frustration of good cops trying to get justice for a citizen and how the system makes it terrible, and they have a lot of jokes around that, but they don't joke about that. Like, that is treated seriously. When Holt gives this speech where he talks about how important it is for cops to face consequences and not be absolved of any responsibility or any governance by the law, that's a serious moment. They don't really make fun of that.
Do you know what happens when you refuse to punish cops for their mistakes? When police are treated as a separate class of citizen above the law? It breeds a lack of trust in the community, and that lack of trust means people won't help us with our investigations or testify or even call us when they're in danger. It makes them more scared of us than of criminals and gangsters.
Yeah, I think this show's just stuck in a really interesting place. And, you know, looking at this season, I think it has been very up and down. I think the tone has really kind of wobbled back and forth for a while. They're kind of alternating between, you know, a very serious episode and then a very silly episode, and kind of trying to have it both ways as much as possible. They don't want to ignore the world around them, but still at its heart, it's a workplace comedy. And so it's trying to shoehorn a lot into these last 10 episodes. But it really, I think overall, the show has kind of started to buckle under the weight of its core concept, which when it began, it is a right down the middle workplace comedy where they take comedic elements of policing and created this diverse cast. It's not like they have never acknowledged police misconduct in previous seasons. There was a story arc involving the Terry Crews character being profiled, and you know, there was a very serious episode about that a couple years ago. They've tried to acknowledge it in the past, but I think over time, cannot help but buckle under the weight of the world around it. And it's a shame. Enjoyment of this show is a kind of a casualty of real-world police misconduct. And your mileage may vary whether you can go back and watch old episodes of this show and enjoy it as the brilliant workplace comedy that it is. It is hard to watch. I had taken more than a year off from watching this show. This was a show I would go back and rewatch all of the Halloween heist episodes of this show. I would just go through season 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and just watch all the Halloween heist episodes in order. And if they continued to come back and do specials that were nothing but Halloween heists every year into infinity, I'd be thrilled. But it is very hard for this show to maintain the kind of balance that it is trying to maintain this season.
I'll play a little devil's advocate here, though, and say that policing in Brooklyn is probably a pretty tough and brutal business, period. If you're going to take policing in Brooklyn and turn it into a lighthearted workplace comedy, you are doing that kind of thing to a lot of serious subjects, including murder, including sexual assault, including the impact of poverty on policing. It's not just George Floyd. And so the thing that's interesting to me is that people are feeling weird about this when maybe they should have been feeling weird about how the show makes light of policing in Brooklyn, period.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad, Stephen, you brought up that previous episode. That was from season 4 where Terry Crews, the Terry character, he's outside of his home and he is encounters a police officer who doesn't have his badge on him, and the guy stops him. He racially profiles him. And so the sort of back and forth that's happening there is that he wants to file a complaint, and then Captain Holt is like, I'm not going to do this because this is only going to make your life harder. It's kind of doing what you were talking about, Eric, that this season has not really done, which is that you have these two Black men really hashing out, like one who's a little bit older. He comes from a different perspective. He's a little bit more conservative. He's like, you have to pick your battles, and I want you to be able to rise to the ranks so you can make change that way, which is a very old school Black conservative mentality. On top of that, Holt is gay. So he's like, I also have to deal with all this stuff.
But as a Black gay man, I never had a superior who was on my side. So the advice I offered you, that came from a different place, a different time. I put all my energy towards rising to a rank where I can make a difference. And I realize that if I don't back you up on this, I would be betraying the very thing that I worked so hard for.
I thought it did a pretty good job of dealing with that. But then at the very end of the episode, they find out that Terry didn't get the promotion that he was hoping for. And he's like, is it because I filed a complaint? And Holt is like, maybe.
Maybe I could have done more if I had gotten a liaison job.
Maybe. But one thing's for certain, Mal Dak will think twice before making another bad stop like that again. And that's a win.
And I'm like,
really?
So I feel like from that episode to now, as much as I feel like this season is a little too preachy, some of it is a little too, again, trying to walk that line and have it both ways in a way that, to me at least, does not feel satisfying. But I do feel like it's come a long way since that episode. Like, it feels like it knows more so that we are in an uncomfortable spot and is at least trying to reckon with it, even if it's not working. And so I guess I come down on the end side of like, did I need season 8? I don't know if I did. Mm-hmm. I would have been happy if it had ended before this. And I do think I will go back and rewatch episodes because I'm going to sound like a hypocrite, but like, despite the fact that it is very much espousing and all of these things that I, you know, in my real life find appalling, I still come back to the fact that this is an ensemble that works so well together and is so funny. And like at the top of its game, there's just a magic there. And I think Captain Holt is one of the most interesting and greatest characters. Like Andre Brower is just fantastic. So I can't throw that all away. But at the same time, I don't feel as though this season, just the way the show is set up and the way the sitcom genre is set up, it's not quite working. But I guess I give them a little bit of credit for even attempting to do so.
I guess it's like watching old episodes of Seinfeld.
Watching old episodes of just about anything.
Yeah, I was going to say. But like,
hey, well, no, because yeah. At least you're not watching old episodes of NYPD Blue.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to this show's credit, I mean, it has tried over the course of its first 7 seasons. It was trying to model ethical police behavior. They would show them de-escalating. You never saw them shooting at suspects. There clearly were conscious decisions made to make as ethical a cop show as they could make. I think that will make it easier to rewatch old episodes. I think season 1 has aged the worst. Mm. There's also that really unfortunate plot line involving Rosa and Boyle.
Oh God, I forgot about that.
That they scrap at the end of season 1 at long last. But, you know, I think it is a show that people may still be able to revisit with those reservations. I do want to also put in a good word for one decision they've made in season 8. As wobbly as I think this season is, I really appreciate that they have made a core plot line of season 8, the difficulty in establishing work-life balance for new parents, that weighs as heavily on Jake as it does on Amy, mm-hmm. where Jake bears as much of the parental burden as Amy does. And I appreciate that there is a, how can this character have it all, that is about Jake and about Amy. And right. I did appreciate that is something that a lot of shows wouldn't necessarily try to incorporate into a mix that contains a lot of elements.
I got to say, one of the things I like about the last season, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of debate about it, but I think casting John C. McGinley as Frank O'Sullivan, the head of the policemen's union, was a smart idea because they put a face on systemic racism in policing and turned him loose in their storylines.
If anyone else was being treated the way our brave officers are being treated, they'd be marching in the street, which I would oppose, by the way, because marching leads to rioting and rioting leads to looting.
Okay, this doesn't seem like it's going to be a short rant.
Yeah, we're going to head out.
I'm glad that they at least said, you know, we're going to talk even more overtly about how, number one, even if you view yourself as a good cop, the system can make it hard for you to be a good cop. But Jake is also being forced to face the reality that the things that he thought he was doing as a good cop might not have been good. They might not have turned out the way that he thought. You know, having that character sort of face, you know, is it possible to even be a cop and be the kind of man I want to be? I mean, for a comedy like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, that is some heavy stuff to tackle, and I'm kind of glad that they're trying.
Yeah, well, we want to know what you think about Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
One last thing before we go. We're going to be talking about The Sopranos, and we want your questions. You can email us a voice memo with your question to PCHH@NPR.org. Again, you can send us a voice memo with your question to PCHH@NPR.org. And we will see you all tomorrow.